Welcome to FPL 360. Sean, we're back.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a hiatus for those who haven't noticed. You know, recharge the batteries for an extra 4 game weeks. Well, we've been seeing some crazy things pan out. I'm happy to be back, though. How have you been, Chuck?
I've been good. It's definitely good to be back. We've missed you guys. We would like to say that this is going to be a slightly different show from what you're used to, but we hope it'll be good, and if it's not, please tell us.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what you can expect compared to last season, we're going to be focusing a bit more on draft, specifically Fantrax leagues using the Taga scoring, but I've been very adamant that we will still be talking about FPL because I've gotten off to a very good start.
That basically means when Sean isn't doing well, we might not be talking about FPL as much. But let's start off with the most important question of the night. Sean, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm having a Pilsner Urquell, which is a nice Czech Pilsner. It's something I've come into lately. It's probably going to be my go-to beer for the beginning of the NFL football season. How about yourself?
Nice. I had a long day, so I went to my old favorites, a New Belgium Citronellic Tangerine IPA.
What? I've never heard of that. I do like New Belgium though, but what is that new or?
No, it's one of their staples. It's just imagine a hoppy beer with a little bit of a citrusy aftertaste.
Okay, so it sounds like it'd be enjoyable. It sounds like it's probably a little bit higher up there on the Richter scale in terms of potency.
Let's see. I can tell you. Where is it? I'm currently trying to find the actual percentage. Not that bad. Only 6%.
Right. Yeah. I was gonna say, yeah, man. But well, you know, football's back. Both footballs are back, so times are good.
That they are. This means we now spend all of our days looking at a screen.
Yeah, it's literally fantasy football to fantasy football to fantasy football. So hopefully I'm probably going to need glasses by the time I'm the end of maybe 26. Give me 2 or 3 years.
Join the club. I'm already going blind.
I've been going blind from watching Manchester United, but we'll get to them later. That was just my little plug-in for when we talk about them.
Yeah, but let's get to the all-important game of this weekend and start our match previews the right way with Tottenham versus Liverpool.
So, what is your stance on Lucas Moura? Because, obviously, Heung-min's son's back. He is back for good. He doesn't have to do military service, so you don't have to worry about that long term. Moura is coming off being the player of the month, and he's looked great. I mean, do you think he keeps his place here? Or since they are in need of a little bit of a pick-me-up after the defeat to Watford, do you think Son walks right back into the team?
So, first, let's get one thing straight. Lucas Moura did not deserve player of the month. If it wasn't for Sadio Mane and Mo Salah splitting votes, he would not have been player of the month.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing that most of that was due to the fact of his second half performance at Old Trafford.
Essentially. And also, Lucas Moura's finishing rate is pretty unsustainable. I want to say it's around 40% of his shots have ended in goals, something like that. Whereas Heung-min Son is the proven product. The thing is, I don't see why both of them can't coexist with the fact that Christian Eriksen has been dropping deep lately for Tottenham.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because from what I've been looking at and in terms of what I've seen based on the eye test, he's been playing as like a secondary forward in support of Harry Kane. From his heat maps, he's actually been getting forward more than Kane, and Kane has been dropping back in. So that would, I mean, put into question, are Trippier, Davies, are they in like risk of missing time with Son back, because Pochettino's been alternating between the three-man defense and four at the back? Or do you see him like continuing with this tactical flexibility, just opponent to opponent?
I wouldn't say the wingbacks are at risk of missing time, just due to the fact that Son hasn't been a very good wingback when Pochettino has tried to play him there.
Let me just, before you continue, what I mean is them losing minutes because Pochettino's rotating the formation and not playing with wingbacks and playing with two at the back to accommodate Son, not essentially playing him out of position.
But they'd still play. Because if you're playing four at the back, it's still going to be Davies, Toby, Vertonghen, Trippier.
So then who's the rotation risk if, let's, for all intents and purposes,
since it looks like Moussa Dembélé has moved into being a complete bench player this year, unfortunately, it's probably Dele.
Yeah, I know he's nursing a little bit of a minor injury, minor muscular strain after withdrawing from England. On the other side of the pitch, Liverpool are Liverpool. I mean, they have the attacking trident, so we don't really need to rehash it there.
They are who we thought they were.
Yeah. Alisson, obviously Liverpool's conceded one goal, and it was the Alisson blunder against Leicester City. So the defense has pretty much been perfect outside of that.
Yeah, it's not going to stay perfect.
Yeah, so what's your feeling going into this match, but I'm just going to say what's your prediction, since I knew you were going to give me your prediction.
My feeling? Absolute terror. No team can make your defense look worse than Liverpool right now, because they're an absolute unit going forward. The thing is, I think that all of Liverpool's quote-unquote good defending has been down to the fact that they keep the ball and don't let you get it. Tottenham is a team that is good in possession, so I think they're going to get their chances to score goals. The big question is which Harry Kane shows up. If it's the one that's been playing so far this season, we're going to lose that game, probably 3-1. If the good Harry Kane shows up, and the one that we all know can play, then I'd probably go for a 3-3 draw, because I still don't think our defense can stop Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing goals in this. I mean, I was looking at the offensive output of both clubs so far. Spurs and Liverpool are both averaging over 15 shots per match, and more than 5 on target. The number that kind of stuck out for me,
Tottenham's defense hasn't been good.
Yeah, and that's kind of why Pochettino's been rotating the approaches. I see Liverpool probably dominating possession, and I say that just because I'm not, after that Watford display, they just didn't look that invigorated as a side.
I do think the international break will help with that, though, and the fact that Kane at least didn't start the second England game is a big deal. Because the issue is, Spurs have been going since last season with essentially no break.
Yeah, they're somewhat running on fumes. The other thing to point out here is the slate's long term, because we have the European competition starting. So I know at least for Liverpool, they have a pretty rough run coming up.
We both do.
Match for them. Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, I'm trying to give Liverpool a little bit of light of day here, Chuck.
I'd say that both of these teams are teams in very similar situations. Obviously, since Spurs lost to Watford, this game is a much bigger game for them than it is for Liverpool. But both do want to leave with all 3 points. If I had to pick right now, I unfortunately pick Liverpool leaving with all 3.
Yeah, I think Liverpool's going to win. I mean, they have PSG, Southampton, Chelsea in the Cup, Chelsea in the league, Napoli, and Man City over their next seven. So this is going to be a really big game for them. I'm thinking it's going to be, I think it's going to be a one-goal game either way. Maybe, but it's, I'm thinking 2-3 Liverpool in terms of a projection.
Still going 3-1 Liverpool.
Okay. The next match on the slate we're going to talk about, I think it's rather appealing. This would be, I don't know, what are your thoughts on Bournemouth versus Leicester City? The Cherries are going to be at home where they've been good, and Leicester City are going to have Vardy back, so this is what I'm excited to watch.
Before Ryan Fraser got injured, I loved this game. With Ryan Fraser out, I think Bournemouth's going to struggle because he's done everything for them this year. He's advanced the ball. He's taken most of their set pieces, although Diego Rico has took some of them in his debut. And unless Junior Stanislas is healthy enough to start this game, which I highly doubt, I think the Bournemouth attack is going to have some trouble against what is a decent but not good Leicester defense.
So, it honestly, it's like the age-old question. Is Leicester City good? The answer for me,
yes.
I still really don't know. They're obviously better with Jamie Vardy back.
Well, actually, define good.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So, if you're looking at the table outside of the top six, obviously Leicester's up there. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't know. We see this all the time, and I feel like every time we go on the pod, at least over the last season, and we talked about Leicester looking good, they just turned around and got their butts kicked.
Well,
so I'm a little hesitant here.
I mean, but obviously, if I had to pick one of these teams to finish in the top 10, it'd be Leicester. Right now, it looks like both of them probably do, but I think at the end of the season, Leicester's higher in the table than Bournemouth.
Yeah, I would agree with that bet. I wouldn't bet against it. In terms of things that are of note, Ricardo Pereira. Now, this guy was hot in the summer, coming into the Premier League from Porto. He's been used as a right wing in two away matches and a right back in two home matches. If that trend continues, which I think it will, is he, outside of Vardy, the most favorable fantasy asset for the Foxes in this match?
Considering the amount of attention that James Maddison will command from the Bournemouth defense, I'd say it's either him or Chilwell.
Yeah, Chilwell's also looked good. His ownership has climbed a bit in recent weeks.
As it should.
Yeah. The only other thing for me here, the two notes, being that Diego Rico, I think, is the real deal. So it's pretty much the end of Charlie Daniels' reign as the, you know, mid-level attacking fullback to look at for FPL. Also, Jefferson Lerma is pushing for another start.
This is really sad because I love Lewis Cook.
Dude, I was so on board the Lewis Cook train. Then in one of my columns for RotoWorld last year, I wrote that by the time next season came around, Lewis Cook would be pretty much inside the England squad.
But we also didn't anticipate Bournemouth making good buys for a change, because if you look at their history, all of their big money signings have either ended up hurt on the bench or moved on to other clubs.
Yeah, I guess before we move on, in terms of fantasy plays here, obviously we outline Pratt. Is there anyone, I guess, on the fringe of relevancy you want to note? Obviously, if you have Callum Wilson, you're starting Callum Wilson because he's been really good so far. Josh King also definitely a must start. Is there anyone here you really like that might have flown under the radar a bit?
I mean, in my FPL side, I am starting Steve Cook in this game just because he also gets forward and will keep his place. Because I don't really think that Leicester will keep a clean sheet. I just don't think that Bournemouth will win.
Yeah, the big dilemma I'm facing, because I have a couple guys listed as doubts in my FPL squad, I've had Fraser, and I've been rolling with him. Like you said, he's been great. I don't know what to do with him. I was praying that, I was praying he would come back in. It doesn't look like it there. The way that kind of changes the match for Bournemouth, I mean, it's just more power to Diego Rico in terms of set pieces and stuff.
Well,
and
also a lot more pressure on David Brooks.
Yeah, he should come back into the team here. He missed out last week, but if Fraser misses out, he's pretty much nailed on to come back in. I've liked what I've seen from him so far.
Yeah, he's been doing the right thing. It's just like a lot of the other guys on promoted teams, it's learning what worked in the championship doesn't necessarily work in the top flight.
Yeah, and then the other thing to note is with Vardy coming back in, you have Claude Puel's decision of what he's going to do with Damari Gray. Does he go out to the wing? Most likely at the expense of Albrighton, with Pereira most likely on the right and Amarte at fullback. What's your thoughts on Damari Gray for fantasy purposes across all formats?
Man.
Assuming he gets a start.
I mean, Damari Gray is a maddening fantasy player. He's really good, but he's so streaky that I can't tell you to trust him.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, there's tons of potential, and they've been waiting for him to hit it, but for now I haven't seen enough to really back him.
Yeah, like, he's someone worth starting in a DFS slate.
Yeah, taking a punt on him. Yeah, I would like him. I mean, it's funny you mentioned DFS. I haven't really done any of that this season. This week, I might get back in, though, just because I'm jonesing for some football after the international break.
I just set up my first DFS lineup of the year, actually.
Yeah. We'll get to those ones a bit later. But for now, we do need to talk about unbeaten Chelsea.
The slaughter fest that is Chelsea versus Cardiff City. So did you see Neil Warnock's quote that, well, if we sit back, they'll put like two or three past us, so we might as well give them a go?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. And that's why I did the, I hinted at the transition there, because I wanted to, when I read that, the first thing that came to my mind was how fast I can get all the money I have to my name and put it on the over in this match, because
seriously,
Chelsea could score six or seven here, and I'm not saying Cardiff City is terrible. I mean, they looked better against Arsenal, but the problem is they just don't have the horses to compete up in a goal fest with Chelsea, let alone most clubs in the league. I could see that. I think they could spoil the clean sheet here, but this is like,
you're not buying Chelsea for a clean sheet. That's the thing. See, here, the interesting thing here is Cardiff scoring their first goals of the season wasn't down to them being good. It's down to how laughably bad the Arsenal defense is. But in this game, if they attack Chelsea, Eden Hazard, Marcos Alonso, Pedro are gonna eat.
Yeah, I posted something on Twitter earlier today, taking a look at Pedro and Willian so far. And based on the rotation, it's a Spaniard's turn to start. They pretty much split minutes so far, and since Hazard's returned, one each has started. They've come off the bench in both matches. Assuming Pedro starts, what is your take on Willian off the bench, even if he only gets 30 minutes?
I'd be hesitant to play him off the bench in a game like this, just because of the fact that I think by the time that it gets to the 60th minute, Chelsea could already be up 4-0, and then you're throwing on Ruben Loftus-Cheek and a couple of random youngsters or something.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree. I would still be starting him. If you're in a 12-team league, I would definitely start him. I would be hesitant in OFPL. I would really only look at Pedro here.
Yeah, and
just because he's been better in his time.
Well, the real question, and actually one that I also asked on Twitter to Jeremy Spitzberg, would you rather own Morata or Jamie Vardy this week?
It's kind of a tough question.
It's a very tough question. It's the transfer that I'm contemplating, should I make or not, in OFPL.
So, what I'm thinking is that if you look, so Bournemouth, they beat Cardiff 2-0 at home, and then they drew 2-2 against Everton in a match that had two red cards, one apiece for the Toffees and the Cherries. So I do like Vardy, and he's fresh. He's going to be chomping at the bit to play. And that kind of I think I would go Vardy here just because Morata could score, but I think Vardy has a better chance of getting a brace than Morata does.
That's fair.
I mean, I'm by all means, I think both of them are fine, and obviously Morata is good to start. But I do like Jamie Vardy more just because he's been out for a bit, so he's definitely fresh. And Morata, you know, I mean, you're right. If Chelsea gets up a bit, I mean, we could see Giroud off the bench, or maybe Sarri gets crazy and experiments.
I would say, with my luck, Morata's not going to start this game.
Yeah, I mean, you could maybe we finally see Hazard in the false nine in the Mertens role. And Willian and Pedro out wide. That I don't think.
Please God, no. Don't even mention that.
In terms of stuff for Cardiff, we had Danny Ward score against Arsenal.
Let's be real. This is not the week to play your Cardiff assets.
Well, when you reached out to me and said, "Hey, do you see Danny Ward scored?" I thought you were talking about the goalkeeper that Leicester City bought from Liverpool. I didn't realize that there was a guy named Danny Ward on Cardiff City.
He is a 4.5 million priced midfielder in OFPL.
Yeah, but he's pretty much a forward, and he could be starting up top with Bobby Reid or Ken Sahora. Any interest in Cardiff across any formats?
Honestly, no. Because their center backs rack up a lot of value due to getting aerial duels, but if you're a bet to give up 4+ goals, the negatives are going to add up real quick.
Yeah, I would stay away from them in this match. And I won't spoil it because we're going to talk about one of their defenders specifically later on in the pod, but there is someone of note that I think could be worth adding long term.
Cardiff has some decent long term bets. You're just not playing them against Chelsea. But next up, we should get to what's essentially not necessarily a toss up, but a harder game to predict than it should be, with Huddersfield against Crystal Palace.
Yeah, I mean, the Terriers obviously got off to a rough start. They lost their first two, and then they got thumped by Manchester City 6-1. I mean, since then, they got back-to-back draws, and they had a good result at Goodison against Everton before the international break. The interesting thing for me is if Wagner will be, does Wagner stick with an overly defensive formation just because Crystal Palace are potent when Zaha plays, or does he go with his preferred 4-2-3-1 formation that he used at home pretty much all of last season?
I'd assume Wagner's going to attack Crystal Palace just because their defense is their soft spot.
Yeah, I mean, that calls into question someone who was pretty popular on the show last season. If Alex Pritchard is back in the starting 11, and you're in a 12-team Fantrax league using Thomas scoring, are you playing him as a punt midfielder?
No. I love Alex Pritchard, but he has been nothing short of useless in all fantasy formats.
Yeah, the only other thing of note for the Terriers, besides the fact that they are bottom of the league in goals scored, goals conceded, shots per game, shots conceded, is Jonas Lösel and Ben Hamer in goal.
And Steve Mounier.
I think we're going to get to him. I think Lösel gets a start here, although Hamer is fit, so he could come back into contention.
See, after Hamer's first couple starts, I don't think you can justify starting him after Lösel put out a competent performance.
Yeah, I would agree there. I think the number one shirt is firmly back on his back for now. Yeah, and then Steve Mounier, because the aerials won. He has a ton of value in Fantrax leagues with Taka scoring.
Yes, he does.
But
that's about it.
outside of them, yeah, it's tough to pin. Crystal Palace, on the other hand, there's an abundance of options.
So does Max Meyer start?
Yeah. Does Meyer start? We have the Zaha thing. He's supposed to be fit, although I was looking at his transfers out, and he's the most transferred out player in OFPL. So I'm not sure if that was people just jumping the gun over the international break or if they're not confident, but considering the fact Palace have lost their last 10 matches without Zaha, if he's able to play, I don't see why Hodgson would start him on the bench, because they're pretty teethless without him.
Oh yeah, if Zaha's fit, Zaha's playing. I don't even think Zaha would allow Hodgson to sit him if he's fit.
Yeah, plus you have Benteke dealing with a persistent knee issue. So that means
Lloyd Soloroth.
Yeah, Soloroth, and you also have Ayu in there. I would think that what is most likely gonna happen is it's Soloroth though, because
Ayu looked so bad in their last game.
Yeah, I don't really, it's funny, they got off to a really good start in the first match, and then they just haven't had it.
Well, the interesting thing is, one, Crystal Palace just isn't very good. I mean, actually, I don't even know if they've won a game without Zaha.
They've lost their last 10 league matches. They've lost without him.
And then there's also the James Tompkins situation.
Yeah, he's been out for the last two matches, so Martin Kelly has been in at center back.
That's been the bigger issue.
Yeah, I mean, how do you see this one playing out? I mean, Palace is averaging like 16 shots per game, and Huddersfield give up the most, second most in the league.
I think Palace wins. I'd pin this at a 2-1. Meaning the only startable Palace defender is Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
And their best one. I think someone.
You're not playing PVA in this game. You probably are because of the Huddersfield attack, but he'll still burn you.
Are you asking me, or are you asking your average FPL player?
Yeah, that's the difference. I know you're playing PVA. Everyone else is dropping PVA.
I'm playing PVA anytime that guy's in the starting 11. He's in my FPL team. I tried to get him in pretty much all my Fantrax teams. I love that dude. I'm not going to go on about my normal rant about him, but everyone every season says PVA, stay away from him. And at the end of the year, he always has the best attacking numbers, or one of the best up there for defenders. Right. Granted, he's going to go through his major ruts, but I think this is a big week for him.
All right, so you're doing bits.
Yeah, I'm also in his fantasy league. Shout out if he's listening. the over here is 2. I'd take that. Yeah, I don't know. I think this could be 3-1 Crystal Palace, maybe even 3-0, since Huddersfield has scored both their goals off set pieces this season, so most likely they're not going to be scoring from the run of play. But then again, you never know. I mean, they did beat Crystal Palace 3-0 at Selhurst last season.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. Next up, we've got really quite the interesting matchup of the most impressive promoted team so far in Fulham taking on Manchester City that hasn't hit the highs of last year.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on the whole Leroy Sané conundrum right now?
Well, I drafted Leroy Sané in the second round of our Fantrax League, so I'm mad as hell.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking into it, and the biggest takeaway for me has, or what I'm assuming, is that Guardiola has been using him as an example for the rest of the team to warn about getting complacent with their spot. And I am a little bit skeptical about what's going to happen going forward. But the one thing I do want to point out, since I'm someone who does have stock in him in one 10-team Fantrax league I'm in, last two seasons, he has not played. Actually, ever since he's come to City, he's always been a slow starter. He's had three poor preseasons, and that's resulted in him pretty much not being in the first team or the starting 11 for the first five or six matches on each occasion. So I do think he'll be back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm keeping faith in Leroy Sané more due to the fact that there is nothing anyone could give me that is worth the value of him when he does play.
Yeah, I mean, if you would you be trading for him now?
This would be a perfect time to trade for him, honestly.
What do you think would be a fair exchange?
I mean, I'd be willing to go as high as to dangle Son for Sané.
Yeah, that is. I think that is a a good comparison. I do think he could get a start here, though. I mean, you had Bernardo Silva picked up a knock with Portugal. He's supposed to be okay. And Raheem Sterling obviously withdrew from England, so we're not sure about him. And just with City preparing for a bunch of matches, I wouldn't be surprised if Guardiola exercises caution, at least in the case of Sterling.
Damn sure hope so.
Yeah, so that puts into question who's going to be starting on the wings. Since Fulham do play an attacking style of football, and we know they're most likely not going to change it, even though they're at the Etihad, Guardiola is going to should roll with his 4-3-3 offensive set here, since he's preferred the 3-5-2 against clubs that are prepared to pack it in against them.
Yeah, what's really interesting in this is, what does Riyad Mahrez do?
Yeah, I mean, what's your takeaways on him so far this season at his new club?
I mean, on the soccer field, he's been good. On the fantasy front, he's been useless.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting more from a fantasy perspective. Although, I stayed away from him in drafts because there was other guys I was more keen on. I mean, long term, when the season ends, who do you think has more fantasy points, Mahrez or Leroy?
Since Mahrez isn't starting every game and there's so many people on set pieces, I'm going Sané.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. I do think because he is the only left winger that's a natural left winger, it does give him a little bit of an edge with Sterling being able to play on both sides, but obviously preferring it on the right. Looking at the rest of their team, do you think they're going to keep a clean sheet here, or do you think Fulham are going to nick a goal?
Derby City will rear its head and likely give up a goal to Sherla.
Yeah, if I had to pick a goal scorer, though, for Fulham, it would definitely be Alexander Mitrovic. The guy has been on fire, and right now he's dominating the statistics.
But you don't, You'd also like to assume that City is coming in with one thing, stop Mitro, and that they likely have good enough defenders that they can attempt to stop Mitro, meaning that the guy that's taking the other half of their shots will poke one through.
Yeah, and then you also have whether or not Ryan Sessegnon gets back into the team with Vietto having looked good lately. What's your thoughts on Vietto in fantasy? Is he a deeper league ad, or is
he's definitely a 12 team league ad, but I hesitate to really give that much credit to players who have had more than half their points in one game.
Yeah, he had those two assists on his debut, I believe, which was two matches ago. I mean, he definitely has the talent to be a fringe starter in fantasy. And his two assists were against Burnley. So, I don't know. For me, I'm a little bit coy on him, just because I think Sessegnon could come back into the
team.
Yeah, because
if we're going by who's more talented here, it's Sessegnon.
Looking at the rest of Fulham, obviously we outlined the big guys who are going to be started pretty much no matter what. Tom Carney, we're not sure if he's going to be ready to start. I know he's going to be assessed ahead of the match, so he's like going to be a late fitness test. Is there any of the other peripheral players on Fulham you'd be interested in this week? Or is this one where, if you're not sure, you're just going to pass?
I mean, there's realistically only three players on Fulham that I would realistically start this week. And that's Mitrovic, Sherla, and Seri.
Yeah. I guess since Tom Carney is pretty much the only other guy in there. If he's fit to play, would you start him? He is owned in 69%.
Yeah, if he's fit, yes.
How do you see this one playing out? You think there's going to be goals in it? You think this is going to be...
Goals for City?
Goals for City? The over's at 3.5.
Fulham can't defend. They can do everything else, but they cannot defend.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's going to be goals in this one. I'm leaning towards like a 3-1, 4-1
City. Honestly, I'd go 4-2 City, because I think that Fulham has enough talent that they can put more than one past City, because I do think that City's probably going to underestimate them going into this game.
Yeah, I do. I could see that happening. Either way, I'm definitely going City in this one, and even though the over at 3.5 is rather high,
still I'm
expecting that to hit. Next match we're going to talk about, is there going to be goals in this one? Newcastle hosting Arsenal.
Newcastle
likes to pack it in. Arsenal's defense is still trying to figure out what that means to be a defender. I think it's Arsenal here. And this is probably going to be like a grinded out 2-1 victory.
Honestly, I agree with that. But the biggest thing is, for Arsenal, out of Ramsey, Mkhitaryan, and Ozil, who starts, who sits?
So, my guesstimate on the whole situation follows the line of thought that Ozil is now a luxury. He's not really a match-to-match necessity with the way Unai Emery plays. He wants his forwards to move off the ball a lot, and he wants them to press high. And those are two things Ozil has never done in his career, and he's not known for his work rate. I think if I was picking this team using, you know, Emery's approach, I would have Ramsey and Mkhitaryan both in the 11 with Lacazette up front and Aubameyang out wide, since they did look better going forward against Cardiff City with that approach.
Yeah, but it is Cardiff City. This defense is better.
But Arsenal's attack hasn't shown me enough outside of that glimpse at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea to be confident in saying they're going to be able to put two past Newcastle without Lacazette and Aubameyang on the pitch at the same time.
The funny thing here, Newcastle could put two past Arsenal. That defense is laughably bad. In Fantrax leagues, Socrates is averaging negative points per game.
Well, friend of the show, Tyler Dunn, pointed this out to me way back when Socrates signed for Arsenal. And he's an avid Bundesliga watcher. Socrates isn't that good, and he's lost his step. So he's lost the small amount of pace he had in the past. So I'm not surprised that he's averaging negative numbers. And I think when he got brought in, it was just a hyped up arrival because people knew his name, most likely from having used him in FIFA over the last couple seasons.
I mean, it's also just like putting anyone that doesn't hold their ground as a center back next to Mustafi is asking for trouble.
Yeah, they don't. Obviously, they're missing Koscielny. And the other thing for me is the lack of pace in the middle. That is a big concern for them moving forward. The Gunners have scored 5 of their 8 goals with Lacazette and Aubameyang on the pitch, though. And that's a stat for me, and that's why I think if both those two start, then Arsenal will win. I could see this being a draw if both of them don't start, though.
Yeah, but realistically, I find it hard to see a situation that Arsenal doesn't win this game. But it will be a fight.
Yeah, I mean, what do you... If you are an Ozil owner, what advice would we give to them?
Trade him for anything.
What kind of value do you think you'd be able to get, though, considering based on Fantrax leagues with Taga scoring, he is the 95th ranked midfielder.
So, considering the amount of people that for some odd reason that I don't understand are jaded with Anderson, I'd dangle Ozil for Anderson and see if someone will bite, even though they shouldn't. If you don't get something like that, probably you're not getting anything higher than a midfielder 3.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Ozil was going to have a really good season this year. So far, it's been pretty much polar opposite. If you own Mkhitaryan, if you own Ramsey, this definitely works in your favor because they both look better, and based upon what they offer to the team, they fit better. So I would say it's probably going to be those three being rotated, at least for the short-term future, but I would definitely give Ramsey and Mkhitaryan the edge in terms of long-term minutes and starts. Getting back to fantasy, though, in terms of Newcastle, is there any of their assets you're interested in this week?
Solomon Rondon.
Outside of Rondon?
Not really.
Kennedy?
I don't know how I want to put Kennedy right now. Because he doesn't look like the Kennedy of last year now that teams have film on him.
Yeah, he's definitely been less effective. The guy I would look at if he's fit to play is Matt Ritchie.
I mean, I'm still waiting for Muto to get a start.
Yeah, I don't really know what his deal is. But
I mean, as long as Kennedy's fit, Muto's not going to start, but he should.
Yeah, the other thing I would note is this match does have a substitute cameo header by Hosolu written all over it.
Doesn't every match?
Yeah. I'm going to say, so we stop pandering on this match because I've grown tired of it. 2-1 Arsenal.
Honestly, I'd second your prediction for once.
Let's talk about your team. Yeah, I'm really eager to talk about this. Watford, Manchester United.
Are the Hornets going to claim another scalp?
The thoughts going through my head for this match are all negative. They're all very negative as a Manchester United supporter. First of all, I had Watford pinned for relegation this season and Javi Garcia being the first manager sacked. Doesn't look like that's going to be panning out. I hope the first manager sacked now is Mourinho. I don't get it. I'm not sure what he's been smoking, but whatever he has is screwed up our team. Do you think Watford's form, though, is a sign of things to come? Maybe another Leicester City fairy tale? Or do you think they come back down to earth this weekend and Manchester United puts them back in their rightful bottom mid-table place?
I don't think they come back to earth until the festive period.
Watford have in recent seasons always started good. This is by far their best, but they are a team that usually starts fast.
Yeah, most definitely. This is a tough game to call. I want to take Watford, but I still feel like I have to give United some credit. I don't know why, because they don't deserve it right now. But I do think that Lukaku will be able to get it done.
Yeah, I mean, Watford are obviously the underdogs in this match, but they're only United's only a half goal favorite. And in terms of where the action has been, there's been a decent amount on Watford. So I think this is going to be there's going to be goals in this, because Watford's big fantasy asset so far, Jose Holabas, is probably going to be able to get up and have his way on the flank. So I could see him getting an assist here, continuing his form. I'm going to go with 3-2 United.
Oof.
The thing I'm confident in is a Lukaku brace, because if he gets the service in the box, he's definitely going to put a header away, considering he took both his chances pretty well against Burnley.
I mean, I'll second your Lukaku brace, but I don't think that Watford are going to put two past United with them at least seeming to get back to their defensive stride again.
I mean, Watford did just put two past Spurs. Would you say Spurs' defense is in worse shape than United's at the moment?
Yes.
Yeah, Watford got both those goals from set pieces. So,
yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Spurs defending has been a dumpster fire this year.
What's your pulse on Holabas in fantasy? In OFPL, he's one of the most brought in players ahead of game week 5.
I mean, I'm not adding him because we've seen this from him before. He gets on these massive hot streaks to then hit you with 5 weeks of negative points in a row.
Yeah, the one thing to note which I came across was he has taken most of their corners. I think he's actually fourth amongst all players in corners with 19 right now. So having the added pip of taking those does give him more value. Clean sheets, he only has one so far, so his production has come from those four assists and that goal. I like him in matchups where they're favored or they're not playing against, you know, actually, I was going to say teams that are better than them, but right now United's not better than Watford based on the table. So, you know, I guess you could run him out there. Obviously, you're starting him in draft leagues, but is now the time to sell high on him?
Yes.
What do you think you would be able to get realistically back.
I mean, I think you could, if you want to target, like, because you could get either a combination of, like, a midfielder three and someone who materialized into a defender two like Chilwell, or you could probably trade him straight up for Ben Davies.
Yeah, I would do that trade to get Davies in return. Looking at the rest of Watford, who are the guys you like in this match from a fantasy perspective?
I like Will Hughes in every match.
Yeah, I mean, Hughes has been... He's been doing... He had a quiet first week, but he's been better lately. I think he's actually put up 15.5, 8.5, and 6.5 in his last three matches. So that's not too bad.
And he's due for a goal.
Yeah. United, you're pretty much starting your guys just because you most likely don't have a better alternative in terms of a ceiling. What's your prediction in terms of a scoreline?
3-1 United.
3-1, yeah. I think 3-2 is a little bit high for me, but I don't know. I just have a iffy feeling about this match.
Well, how do you feel about the next match, which is even more of a toss-up with the fighting Adama Traore's versus Burnley?
Burnley... Okay, so here's the thing with Burnley. They are going to be good now that they're out of the Europa League.
But no one's healthy.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, you have Pope, obviously Stephen Defoe, Gudmundsson, Berg sidelined. Brady
working back to fitness.
Yeah. So if you look at that starting 11, I mean, you have Chris Wood, Jeff Hendrick.
Isn't Stephen Corton. Ward nursing something too?
Yeah. So you'd have, as I was saying, Cork, Westwood in central midfield, Lennon on the right, the youngster McNeil on the left, Charlie Taylor, Ben Mee, Tarkowski, Lowton, obviously Joe Hart, net. Outside of Wood, I just don't really see how they score.
Oh, that's just hearing that lineup aloud sounds a lot worse than it looks on paper.
Yeah, and then you look at Wolves, and not only have they looked good and have Traore back, but they don't have any injuries to really deal with.
No, they have a full pick of their team. The only thing is just, do they still start Raul Jimenez after he hasn't been really hitting anything? And does Adama Traore finally start?
I don't see how you keep him out of the starting 11.
Oh, yeah. If Nuno keeps Traore out of the starting 11 again, I think Wolverhampton fans might strangle him.
Yeah, I mean, considering if you look at what he's done so far, his numbers are pretty amazing. He's played, he's played a total of 90 minutes so far. And in looking at him in fantasy, right, he's put up 40 Fantrax points. I mean, that's nuts. And you have him getting all those successful take-ons. I've actually started him the last 2 weeks, even though I noticed he was not in the starting 11, just because the potency he packs off the bench or whenever he's on the pitch is unrivaled. It's probably up there with having one of those wingers on City or Chelsea.
Yeah,
what he does in peripheral metrics.
Meanwhile, I've regretted not starting him for the past 2 weeks and have vowed to start him forward no matter who he is playing, because he has even gotten double digits coming off the bench against Manchester City.
Yeah, I think Jimenez keeps his place up front because the alternative to him would be Helder Costa, if my memory serves correct.
Bonatini.
Bonatini, him as well.
I'm probably butchering his name, but the other number nine they have.
I mean, none of those guys excite me at all. A guy who does have interesting value, though, is Yamatinho in midfield.
Yes, he does. He has absolutely placed a stranglehold on the value of Ruben Neves by taking all of his midfield opportunities.
Yes, since week two, he's put up 9.5, 13, and 16 points in Fantrax, which is very appealing considering he only has one assist in that span. You're definitely starting him here if you have him.
And he's also taken the most corners in the league.
Yeah, so it's upside there. I think Burnley are going to be fine long term. I don't think, like most people have projected, they'll get relegated. I think they'll finish mid-table. In this match, though, I think there can only be one result, and that is a Wolverhampton victory.
I'm not only calling a Wolverhampton victory, I'm calling a Wolverhampton 2-0 clean sheet.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Burnley and knowing that outside of Chris Wood, it's kind of hard to find goals, that wouldn't be a surprise for me. But I don't see there being more than 3 goals in this match.
It's probably about right. But we will have goals in our next match, which is Everton versus West Ham.
All right, what is going on at West Ham?
Shouldn't we really say what's going on with both teams?
No. I mean, what in God's name is going on at West Ham?
Couldn't tell you. All I can tell you is West Ham has two startable fantasy assets. They are Marko Arnautović, and they are Felipe Anderson. Anything else, you're playing with fire.
West Ham, it's just the same, just beating the drum. Oh, we bring in these guys, we're going to be better, and then it's the same old story. At this point, the people who wanted David Moyes on a stake would have been lucky to have him with the way the team's performed. I mean, Pellegrini was always going to need time to find his best 11, but looking at what they've done so far, it is laughable how bad they've been.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be fine. I'm just concerned on how long it's going to take them.
Yeah, and then Yarmolenko has not gotten a start, and he hasn't looked good when he's played. You have former castaway Robert Snodgrass back in the first team. You have Mikel Antonio bouncing around. Then you have Fabian Balbuena and Issa Diop, two young summer arrivals starting in central defense.
So it's wild that West Ham has even killed one of the best peripheral players to play fantasy in Robert Snodgrass.
I'm surprised he's even, I'm let alone he's still at the club. The fact that he's fought his way back in, since most people, including myself, had him pinned third on the depth chart behind Yarmolenko and Mikel Antonio.
Let's not talk about Yarmolenko. I might cry on the pot.
Yeah, so, like you said, Arnautović, Felipe Anderson, the only two startable assets for West Ham. What about Everton? Because, obviously, Richarlison is still banned for one more match. Yerry Mina, McCarthy, Michael Keane, Jagielka, and now Seamus Coleman are all pretty much ruled out of this game.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah, you have Theo Walcott's also doubtful. Bernard is doubtful. So, again, if West Ham, this is a perfect storm for West Ham to get their first point.
It is. But Dominic Calvert-Lewin's still going to score a goal.
Yeah, I mean, you think he gets the nod out there?
How wouldn't he?
You don't think Lookman could get a chance?
I'm still not sure Lookman exists at Everton until shown otherwise.
I do know that Calvert-Lewin did pick up a knock on Tuesday playing for the England under-21s. If he's fit, I think he starts. But
Goddamn team have knocks?
I mean, they're pretty much in injury purgatory right now.
Well, if West Ham's going to get a point, it's here.
I'm still not confident that the Hammers be able to capitalize.
If Calvert-Lewin doesn't play, then Digne is the only startable Everton player.
Assuming he's in the starting 11 over Baines.
He should be.
I think this match is pretty much stay away from, if possible, in fantasy, since you have West Ham just being bad and then everyone injured on Everton. So, I mean, outside of Jordan Pickford, Sigurdsson, Arnautovic, Felipe Anderson, I wouldn't really touch anyone here. And Pickford being, if you're playing OFPL, I don't think he's a real must-start in draft leagues.
I mean, I honestly wouldn't touch much more in our next match either, to be honest. The Southampton-Brighton battle of mediocrity.
Yeah, Monday night football has never looked more bland.
Well, that's the Monday game? Yikes.
Yeah, thank God the NFL's back. This one has a draw written all over it. And for Brighton, I do love Glenn Murray in this matchup.
How can you not love Glenn Murray? Every time we doubt him, he loses a little more hair and scores a goal.
Yeah, I mean, you have Pascal Gross, who has not been the guy that most people expected when they drafted him early in Fantrax leagues this season. He's only averaging 7 points per match right now.
Yeah, don't tell me about that.
What's up with him? What do you think his struggle is? What's inhibiting him?
Well, it's what's weird is he's taking less shots, he's making fewer key passes, and he's being rotated to Yves Bissouma.
Yeah, it's crazy that someone comes into the Premier League and has a season like he does, and then, I mean, it's only been 4 matches, so I don't want to jump the gun yet, but his regression has been a major concern.
Yeah, like, I'm not ready to sell Gross off for a bag of balls, but it's concerning.
The guy I've wanted to see the most out of all the summer signings for any club is the guy I've seen the least of, and that's Alireza Jahanbakhsh. What is...
Well, look,
I mean, I
look
know
at you pronouncing that name.
I know. I did it... I'm pretty sure I did it correctly, but I tried to say it rather quickly, so people wouldn't be able to pick up on it if I mess it up. I know Brighton's 4-4-1-1 isn't exactly the best formation for how he is skill set, but I am surprised that he hasn't gotten a start yet.
Look at how much time it took for Izquierdo to get his first start last year. Chris Hughton is not usually one to bring in a new guy, especially one from the Dutch league, which is a league that has not translated well to England, and then immediately run that guy up.
Yeah, Chris Hughton's playing style is not really... it's the polar opposite of how we would describe Jahanbakhsh's playing style, which is take guys on and be flashy, where Chris Hughton is, yeah, polar opposite of that. Looking at Southampton, Charlie Austin and Danny Ings up front. They should just be one player, though. But Charlie Austin missed the penalty in the last match.
I don't think they should start together.
I think Ings has done enough to warrant the starting role with Hughes moving back to the one forward set he had been using until going to the two forward set.
Yep. Essentially, it should be Ings and then an attacking band and then some combination of midfielders, and then does it really matter who's defending? Because Southampton's just going to instead make a crap ton of saves.
Yeah, looking at their defense, Alex McCarthy has been extremely good thus far in fantasy.
He has single-handedly won me 2 games in Fantrax. The only 2 games I've won in our league so far, with 20-point performances.
Yeah, he's had 5 or more saves in 3 of his 4 appearances. This one is a draw for me. I'm going to say 1-1. Is that along your lines of thought? You think there'd be more or less?
I think Brighton wins it 2-1.
Glenn Murray brace?
No. I think Gross gets off the mark.
What's your stance on Danny Ings in FPL? He's in my team right now.
Started him last week, was very happy I did. Starting him again this week.
Based on price, I think he is definitely a clear budget forward to target. This match, though, I wish it was switched with pretty much any of the other ones.
Yeah, this
on Saturday.
This is an awful Monday match, but whatever. We'll deal with it.
I mean, I think the next thing we should do is probably talk about free agents and guys to stream. And since we just talked about Southampton, we might as well talk about their defense. Cedric Suarez, 44%. Yannick Vestergaard, 38% in Fantrax leagues.
So if I'm taking one of them, I'm taking Vestergaard. Just because aerials.
I mean, even with Suarez coming off his by far best performance of the season with an assist against Crystal Palace.
I mean, it was barely an assist.
Hey, it counts all the same in fantasy.
It does. But do you see him replicating it? Exactly.
I mean, he failed to put up more than 2 points in the first three matches. Long term, he's going to be somewhere in the middle. I think he still remains a fringe starter. If you play four defenders and you're in a deeper league, I do think he's a starter. In a 10-team league, though, I think he's worth owning or picking up when you do need a pivot. In this match, though, like you said, I'd probably favor Vestergaard since he's going to be having to mark Murray a lot and deal with that.
Keeping with defenders, let's talk about Bournemouth's new guy and Diego Rico.
So one of the leagues I'm in is a 12-team keepers league. And it rewards a lot of those accurate passing percentage and all these other metrics that aren't used in target scoring. But Diego Rico was one of the guys I drafted later in the draft because Charlie Daniels has been good, but Bournemouth did need to upgrade at that. And from what we saw in that first match, I think he is going to be one of the big surprises of the season, especially if he remains on set pieces and cuts into Frazier's share.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. With the fact that he did cut into set pieces, I'm essentially saying anyone in 10-team leagues or over should own Diego Rico. His 12% ownership is in Fantrax leagues is laughable right now.
I mean, he put up 11 points with 2 goals conceded at Chelsea. So you should go out and add him. I would definitely start him this week. Start him moving forward. I mean, Bournemouth have Leicester, Burnley, Crystal Palace, Watford, Southampton, Fulham coming up. So that is a very good run of matches. Before we wrap up today's episode, though, we're going to get to some listener questions. We'll go into the first one since we've run a little bit long. This one's from Joey Bob on Twitter. Thoughts on James Maddison versus Anderson in a trade?
Honestly, this is a tough one because I like both players. I realistically don't think that there's a wrong decision in this trade. Just because if you're trading away Anderson, you're just getting rid of West Ham. But if West Ham somehow comes good, I think Anderson's ceiling is higher than Madison's.
Yeah, this comes down to looking at, okay, obviously Leicester is Jamie Vardy and Madison and Ricardo Pereira look like the two guys who are going to be feeding him the most for assists. There's not as much in the supporting cast, so teams do key in on them. I think from a sustainable point and from a higher floor, Madison, come the end of the season, is probably a better bet. Anderson is a bit more boom or bust. But Chuck, like you said, I don't think you can really go wrong there. The next one's from Kevin Muldoon on Twitter. Rest of season ranks. Ryan Frazier, Johan Berg Gudmundsson and Bernard.
So I'll go first. I'm taking JBG first because, again, I do 100% think that Burnley comes good over the course of the season. I'm taking Fraser second because he would have been first if this was done a week ago, but I'm a little concerned that he loses some of his set-piece opportunities. And then, until Bernard starts, he's useless to me.
Yeah, Bernard is also third for me. JBG was outside of PVA. I like the guys with the good abbreviations. Probably my second favorite FPL player, just because of how good he was when he came in for Brady last season. I agree with you, Chuck. I do think he's going to be first out of these three. Fraser is going to follow him closely. But once Brady is healthy, when both of those guys back in the lineup, I do think Burnley are going to have a resurgence. And I think that's going to translate into a ton of fantasy points.
Great. Now we've got a long question from FPL Hazardous. This is his new name, Given Golo.
Yeah, I do like that.
Tintim League. I have Wan-Bissaka and PVA. Should I drop either for Rico or Ashley Young, assuming that Young slots in for Shaw at left back? So far, Wan-Bissaka has been outperforming PVA. Both have similar attacking stats, but Wan-Bissaka has double the clearances and six times the number of aerials won. Someone did their research before asking this question.
Yeah, I was going to say. Well, with the stats already laid out, I mean, I don't like to tolerate slander of PVA.
This isn't so slander of PVA.
I don't already have disposition before this question. I do really like Rico. I wouldn't touch Ashley Young at the moment. I'm not sure how him and the Shaw situation is going to peter out. I would probably stick with Wan-Bissaka and PVA for right now.
So the big question is, do you trust starting double Palace defenders week in, week out?
So my thing is, I'm assuming that he has either two other good defenders or he plays three at the back. My advice would be to pick from one of those two guys on a week-to-week basis and then play three at the back.
That is maddening. Realistically, I'd rather just save myself the selection headache, start Wan-Bissaka. I'd probably try to trade PVA, actually, before dropping him. But with Rico in the free agency pool, I don't know if you're going to get better than that.
I just think that, while I do like Rico a lot, if you're playing three at the back, that means that the rest of your team is good enough where you can take a risk with doubling up on a team when they have a clean sheet opportunity.
But what if you're not playing three at the back because your team's trash, so you might need five?
Well, I guess operating under that assumption, then I probably would drop. I personally would probably drop Wan-Bissaka to pick up Rico because of PVA. You're asking the wrong person for PVA questions.
Exactly. I was trying to see if I could get any situation in which you'd say dropping PVA. But I will 100. If I had to pick between Wan-Bissaka and PVA rest of season, who has more points, it's Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, ever since I got up and had my little bit of a fit on Twitter about PVA last season, I was already all in. Now I'm double all in, so you will never catch
me.
You
don't have a choice because you are the number one ambassador of the PVA brand.
Yeah, if he was looking to start a fan club, I would be the president, the general manager, and also in charge of recruitment. But no, I do like PVA long term. I think he will outscore Wan-Bissaka, and we might have to get a little bit of a bet on that in terms of Fantrax numbers.
I mean, we can always have a friendly bet between the pods.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Thank you for tuning in. I hope that we came through with enough after our hiatus. Chuck, any closing words, predictions, or tips for Game Week 5?
Honestly, can everyone please just pray for Tottenham this week? That's about all that I have.
Yeah, I would go with back Mitrovic for a goal against Manchester City. And I also really, really like that over in Chelsea.
All right, that's going to be all. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at FPL_360. And we'll actually be back next week now.